Don't buy your new clubs until you hear this interview with Tom Wishon.
This is Golf Smarter. Each week, we tap the minds of PGA and USGA course pros, architects, authors, and teaching gurus to provide you with tips, drills, insights, and advice so that you can lower your scores. Golf Smarter is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Here's your host, Fred Green.
Hi, and thanks for joining us for the Golf Smarter podcast. Our podcast is brought to you in part by the Bird Golf Academy. If you're looking for the ultimate golf learning experience, check into Bird Golf Academy. They have schools all over the United States. Make your plans for this spring. And for more, go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the link to Bird Golf Academy. Today's guest may be a bit controversial to the club manufacturing industry and is probably a thorn in the side of some retailers, but Tom Wishon isn't going to shy away. As a regular listener to the Golf Smarter podcast, you've probably become more knowledgeable about purchasing clubs than most people. Well, it's just the tip of the iceberg. Here's what Golf Week magazine said in a review of Tom's book, In Search of the Perfect Golf Club. In past years, only golf industry insiders were exposed to the stark honesty, humor, and encyclopedia knowledge of golf equipment designer and club fitting guru Tom Wishon. Now every golfer has a chance to learn from Wishon and feed on his honest commentary about golf equipment and how clubs should and can perform. There's no sales speak in Wishon's book, The Search for the Perfect Golf Club. Wishon's makeup doesn't allow him to color a picture in any way other than realistically. On the cover of his new book, In Search of the Perfect Driver, Arnold Palmer says, a few years ago, Tom Wishon helped me understand more about a particular aspect of golf club performance. And what else do you need to know? Enough of them. Let's hear what Tom has to say. Welcome, Tom.
Thanks, Fred. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you today.
Oh, it's really exciting to have you here. You've got some really interesting books, which I've gone through. The Search for the Perfect Golf Club, The Search for the Perfect Driver. I know you have, what, 8 or 9 more books beyond that?
Yeah, most of my other writing has always been done within the trade side of the industry, where I'm educating custom club makers about how to do a better job of custom fitting their golfers and explaining the technology. And basically, those books are written in very ugly, scientific, here's your physics behind it form that most regular golfers are just not going to want to read. So I really wanted to have the opportunity, after being in the business for so long, to be able to write a book in layman's language so that regular golfers or people who really aren't interested in the, you know, the science part of it can understand how to get so much more out of their equipment dollars when they go out to buy a new driver or buy a new set of golf clubs.
Well, we thank you, and we appreciate that very much. Actually, of the books that I've read of yours, my favorite, especially in consideration for this program, was The 12 Myths That Could Wreck Your Golf Game.
Yeah, we realize completely that in today's internet world that attention spans are getting shorter and shorter. So, you know, a lot of golfers aren't going to sit down and read a 200-page book or something like that. But we created 12 Myths That Could Wreck Your Golf Game as a 32-page booklet that basically took the key points out of The Search for the Perfect Golf Club and put them into kind of a Q&A form. To give you the most helpful information on choosing the right golf clubs for your game.
Yeah, I highly recommend if anybody's considering to go out and purchase new clubs, like you said, it's 30 pages long. It's a pamphlet, but it's so worth the read. You'll walk in and you know how when you walk into an auto mechanic, and they can say whatever they want, and you'll go, yeah, sure, absolutely, go for it, you know?
Yep.
They do the same thing when you're trying to purchase golf clubs. So.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the golf industry is a little different these days. You're in a situation now where there are 4 companies that control 75% of the premium golf club business, and what that means is that collectively added together, these 4 companies comprise about $3.5 billion, okay? So the way this is all done is these companies will make their golf clubs to a standard form, you know, same length, same swing weight, same shaft. You get to choose between a couple different flexes, of course. Same lie angles, loft angles, you got it, you know, right there. And they're selling these to golfers who may vary from 5 foot nothing to 6'10", golfers who are athletes to those who are very athletically challenged. strong golfers, weak golfers, and most of all, golfers with all sorts of different swings out there. You know, if you know, I draw a parallel here, which is kind of interesting. A lot of your listeners will have experience from playing baseball, softball, or even tennis. When they've gone out to shop for a new baseball or softball bat or a tennis racket, well, for example, you go into a good sporting goods store and you see all the bats all ready to go, stocked and ready in different lengths, in different weights, in different grip handle diameters, because the makers of bats all know that, baseball and softball players can't use the same bat. They need to have bats tailored for their size, strength, athletic ability, how they swing, so it works the best for them. Same thing with a tennis racket. You go into any kind of sporting goods store where you see high-end quality tennis rackets, you don't see strings in them. And what's more, you see that all those rackets will be stocked in different grip sizes with the size notated on the side of the handle. So, and they do this because they know, again, tennis players vary so much in their ability, and they're going to want to choose the right kind of string for their game and then string it to a tension which matches to their power, their swing speed with this. And custom fitting, in a sense, has been a mainstay in baseball and softball and tennis, you know, for decades, because the makers of the bats and rackets and the retailers all know this is how the players of these games need to have their equipment set up for them, okay? Well, there's another bat and ball sport out there we all love in golf, okay? And that's not the way it is. In golf, you go in and all the men's drivers today are going to be 45, 45 and a half inches long. They're all going to be the same D1 or D2 swing weight. They're all going to have the same grip size. They're going to be basically standard made. And the reason is because the golf companies and their retailers can't possibly make and stock all the different custom options that all the different kinds of golfers need, because there's 14 clubs in the bag. You know, in baseball and softball and tennis, you only need one bat, you know, one club out there. So it's much easier within the business model of those sports to be able to give those players of those games exactly what they need to hit the ball the best they can, not in golf. And yet here we're sitting, you know, and so many golfers, they just go out, they don't know any different because this is the way it's presented and marketed. They buy these standard clubs, they go out, they don't generally hit them any better, and then they shake their heads on the driving range and just say, isn't this a tough game? You know, in reality, if all golfers went out and were really custom fit for their golf clubs in the same way that baseball and softball and tennis players get custom fit, you know, there would be automatic improvement out there for the vast, vast majority of golfers.
How much effect is a poorly fit club have on the result of hitting the ball versus poor mechanics?
Okay. There's no question that the best custom fitting is not going to take you or me and put us on the first tee of the U.S. Open next year. Okay, because there's no question that the ability, you know, to build a repeating and a proper swing, you know, is key. However, there are a lot of things that are in the standard make golf clubs that make it more difficult to hit the ball consistently well or get the most distance that your swing has in it. Then let's use one, you know, as an example. Everybody wants to hit the driver, you know, long and far and straight and consistently, okay? As I mentioned, you know, if you go into any of the golf retail stores and buy any of the standard-made drivers off the rack, for men, you're looking at, you know, anywhere from 45 to 45 and a half inches in the standard length, okay? Well, on the PGA Tour today, the average length that the tour players play with for their driver is 44 and a half inches long, okay? Now, you're looking at a collection of the best golf swings in the world, the most repeating golf swings. If there's anybody in the world who could play with a longer driver and do so consistently well, it'd be the tour players, but they don't. They play with drivers that are actually shorter than what all the companies are trying to sell to every golfer who walks into the golf stores. That all evolved because back in the 1980s, when the number of golf club companies just exploded out there, they were all looking for a way to be able to stick their heads above the other guys out there and have a competitive advantage. And they all started to believe that the longer the club, the farther you're going to hit it. Okay, in your irons, which are all a lot shorter than your woods, that's true. But when you get down to the driver and you start trying to put a 45 or 45 and a half inch driver in the hands of an average golfer with average athletic ability, it is just simply more difficult to control impact. And in that case, custom club makers have known for decades that the old adage is very true that says the longer the club, the harder it is to hit that ball solid and consistent. And I can tell you, you know, from having worked in the custom club making industry for virtually my entire career, you know, there are tens and tens of thousands of golfers who've taken the leap of faith to be able to go in and get custom fit by a good custom club maker, walk out with a driver that's 43 and a half inches long or 44 inches long, and hit it more solid, and from that hit it farther and hit it straighter out there. And they're just thrilled to death, you know, with having discovered this. But without knowing that custom fitting is good for all golfers, and especially for the less skilled ones, you know, golfers can keep going out buying the wrong driver that's too long for them, that doesn't have enough loft, that doesn't have a face angle that can help correct for their slice, or a grip size that's fit exactly to their hands, or a total weight and a swing balance that's good for their tempo and their swing rhythm. They keep mishitting the ball and think it's their fault, when in reality, improvement is out there for more yardage, better accuracy, and more on-center hit capability for at least 80% of the golfers who play the game.
It's amazing. I have a friend, I was out this week, and he took three or four drivers off the shelf, walked down to the driving range, and hit them each five, six times, maybe seven. Said, I hit this one straighter. I'll buy this.
Yeah.
Had never seen a launch monitor. Didn't even know what a launch monitor was.
Right.
And I said, you know, maybe you should get fitted before you just... He goes, no, I hit this one straight. That's fine.
Yeah. And that's the way it's always been. You know, I mean, demo days, which are very common all around the country, you know, those are the ones where you see, you know, some driving range put on a thing where you got 6, 8, 12 different golf companies with their tents, and you get to go out there and just hit their standard clubs, and it's a trial and error situation. And there may be slight differences between one or the other, and you do hit it a little bit better. But that's not custom fitting. You know, custom fitting, and as you mentioned, you know, the better custom club makers will have a launch monitor, and more so, they'll know how to read the data that comes off of it. These are guys and gals, you know, who've spent a long time training themselves to know the cause and effect for golf club specifications versus the golfers that use them, so that they can, you know, spend the 2 hours that's necessary to be able to custom fit everything from scratch for you, so it corresponds perfectly to your size, your strength, your athletic ability, and most of all to your swing characteristics.
So it takes a couple hours to be fitted properly, huh?
Yeah, you know, it really will. I mean, if you're talking about the full set, yeah, if you're talking about the driver only, that can be pretty well accomplished in an hour.
Okay, and, you know, we're at the time of year where there's going to be a lot of clubs, a lot of new product that's going to be announced. They're talking about square head drivers, all the new hybrids that are out there. Should we pay attention to this information, or is it just don't worry about that? Let somebody tell you how to find what you need.
Basically, you know, I mean, all of the marketing from the big companies, and let me put this really straight here. The big brand name golf club companies do a fine job on designing their heads and the shaft and the grip that goes into their club. They really do. You know, that's very good quality components for the golf club. But they ruin it all by going out there and building them all to a standard set of specifications as if it's a one-size-fits-all. It's somewhat like if you had a shoe store and all your men's shoes were size 9.5 and all your ladies' shoes were size 7.5, and you're basically forcing everybody to stick their feet into those shoes and go walk with them with that. You know, that's more obvious, and obviously you feel pain. Maybe it would be a good situation if you know, golf clubs that didn't fit, you know, offered some kind of a pain back to the golfer. So, you know, he or she would know that there's something that would be better out there that could match to how they play and all the, you know, the characteristics that they bring to the first tee.
Oh, fascinating. How can we find a club fitter that we can trust?
Okay. And this is something that you have to kind of approach in the same sense that if you move into a new area, you're trying to find a good hairstylist, a good mechanic, a good doctor, a good lawyer, a good accountant. Okay. You need to, first of all, you can ask other golfers, you know, for recommendations. Okay. That would be one. But the best thing I can tell you immediately would be to head to the website of the Professional Clubmakers Society. This is Pro professionalclubmakers.org. Okay, the PCS, the Professional Clubmakers Society, is a group of about 1,500 dedicated custom clubmakers who just live, eat, and breathe all the different technologies that make different heads, different shafts, different grips, and all the different ways that they can be built and matched to different golfers. Okay, you go to proclubmakers.org, you see a link there that's called Find a Clubmaker. Once you open that up, look for the ones that have a designation behind their name that says Class A. These are the ones who are like the Mr. Goodwrenches. They've passed a pretty difficult accreditation test of their bench skills and their fitting skills so that they've earned this distinction called Class A Clubmaker. You find a Class A Clubmaker, Professional Clubmaker Society member, and go see him or her, and you're going to be in outstanding hands for having all your fitting needs met.
So if they're not necessarily associated with a golf course or even a retail location, should I be concerned about that?
No. And really, you should probably stay away from those people who call themselves custom fitters at a major retail store. And I'm sorry to say that. There are probably a very small handful of people who work in big retail stores who can do a credible job of fitting. But the problem is, and this is one I know firsthand because I've had career experience doing design and product development for a company that has a very, very large chain of big box golf retail stores. There is no control in the golf equipment industry for the retail price of any of the standard-made brand-name golf clubs, okay? In other words, those makers of those big brand-name clubs don't really control the ability of the retailers to make a good profit off these clubs. So because there's so much distribution of all these brand-name clubs, the profit that these retailers make on each one of these things is very small. It's in the area of like 20%. So they're sitting there, for example, with a driver that they paid the big company $300 for, and they can't get more than $375 or $399 for that driver because it's sold everywhere else around the country for that same price. So these companies cannot spend that much time, you know, custom fitting you into whatever club you're going to buy from them because they're not making enough money to spend that time with you. And not only that, you know, another thing that's very clear with a lot of the big-time retailers is they don't pay their people very much, and they don't train them very well because they have a lot of turnover, you know, with that case. So you're going to run into some people, you know, who work in these big stores, you know, who just don't know, you know, how to fit you properly. They don't know how to translate the data off the launch monitors to really get you into the right length, the right shaft, the right loft, the right swing weight, and all these other things that are so critical for helping every golfer get the most out of their game with that. So that's why I talk more in the sense about the independent custom club makers and their ability to be able to take the time, fit you from ground up, and make it all about the custom fit in the same sense that if you went into a custom tailor, everything would be built from scratch for you and it would fit perfectly.
This is mind-blowing information. I mean, we've discussed this on the show before, but it's really coming from the source here. I walked into a retail outlet recently and told him I was looking for a driver. He gave me this stick and said, here, swing this. And go, all right, you got a 100-mile-an-hour swing, and here's the clubs you should be looking at.
Yep.
And I, you know, and then I had to hit it into a net that was 5 feet in front of me.
Yep.
And I walked away really unsatisfied and frustrated with this guy. Felt like he didn't have my best interests at heart at all.
Well, and that's unfortunate, but that's the way this business has evolved, you know, and that's why I wrote the book, because it was just something that was getting to be so frustrating to me to be able to get the message across to regular golfers who simply want to enjoy the game more and get more value for their money out there. Again, like I'm saying, you know, there's nothing wrong with the quality of the big brand name heads and shafts and grips. It's just that the business model of these big companies is to simply build them all in a one-size-fits-all, and that isn't going to be the best for all golfers.
Well, how else do you increase your profit?
Well, yeah. You know, I mean,
you got to lower your expenses, right?
Yeah, or else, you know, actually, you know, take the time to go out and hire some really good custom club makers, you know, who are trained, bring them into the retail store, you know, and put in custom fitting, yeah. You know, as a real custom fitting done the proper way, you know. And again, I got to be, you know, completely open and honest. There are some people around the country who do assemble golf clubs and call themselves a custom club maker who you'd be just as dangerous going in to see them for your needs because they just don't know enough about it. And that's one of the reasons I said, you know, go to the website of the Professional Club Maker Society and find these people who are far more dedicated to reading all these nth degree things about how golf, you know, golf equipment performs for different kinds of golfers. Put yourself in their hands, and wow, you'll not only have a fun time in the fitting experience, learning a whole lot, you know, but you'll end up with the best set of golf clubs you've ever played with.
And if we go to proclubmakers.org and find within a 25-mile radius of where we live, three or four different club makers, but none of them are listed as Class A, what next?
Well, get recommendations. Call them up and say, can you give me the name and phone number, you know, of some people you fit? You know, if they're any kind of a business person and proud of their work, you know, they'll give it to you. And call those, you know, call their other customers and say, how was your fitting experience with Joe, you know, with all this? And let them tell you their experience.
That's good. Good piece of advice. One of the segments that we have on this show is with our sponsor, Edwin Watts Golf. People write in questions about equipment. And I thought because you were on today, I would take a couple of those questions. They're not official Ask Kenny questions, so don't ask me for a hat. But, okay. But maybe we will. But I do had a question here from Ross Davis in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It says, I have a 78-mile-an-hour swing speed and want to know if grips would make a difference to his game, like the G5 wind grip or the Lamkin dual density, or is it just how you feel comfortable?
It really is how you feel comfortable. The number one reason that a grip needs to be custom fit to every golfer is so that they can have a comfortable hold on the club and so their forearms and hand muscles aren't overly tense. You know, the more tense, you know, if you got to hold on to the grip tighter, you know, so that you feel you've got a good, secure hold on the club, now your forearm muscles are tight. It's going to be a whole lot more difficult for you to make that backswing and downswing consistently, you know, and supply all the power that you may have, you know, in your own body out there. That's the only contact we have with the golf club is through our hands. And it has to be in that situation where we can use the least amount of grip pressure that we know is keeping that grip firm and not wiggling around or moving around when we make the swing. And that's what grip size, fitting, and texture, the feel, the tackiness of the grip, that's what it's all about. So it really pertains to comfort. Now, if you go to a custom club maker, they've got measurement capability to be able to measure your hand size and your finger sizes to be able to predict a size, you know, that's going to be good for you, and then they can start from there. But the final decision has to lie with the golfer saying, yeah, I like the feel of that. That really feels comfortable to me.
When I was at the PGA Expo in Vegas a couple months ago, there was one vendor there who was marketing, I think they were called Fat Grips, but it was a strange-looking grip only because it was almost the size of the base of a baseball bat. I mean, it was really fat.
Yep.
And it was like, a guy, you know, I mean, people on the visual side, people are going to look at this and go, there's no way I would ever do this. But is something like that, because this guy, he developed them because he had arthritic fingers.
Yep.
And he couldn't grip, you know, the smaller grip.
Well, there's no question. You know, I mean, and there have been definitely grips that have been made in the industry and marketed under the name of an arthritic grip. They're almost always quite a lot larger and a lot larger in the lower hand area. You know, golf grips have always been tapered. You know, larger up at the end, tapering down smaller as it goes down to where it ends and, you know, blends into the shaft. That simply just evolved from the late 1800s, and nobody questioned it. So some of the people who have been getting into doing a more parallel size grip, or the one that you're talking about that you saw in Las Vegas, these are more of a trial and error experiment thing. And increasing, the biggest benefit that things like that may have for a golfer is to potentially increase the diameter of the grip for his lower hand. So if I'm talking about a right-handed golfer, that's your right hand, okay? And to get the right hand a little bit more comfortable so it doesn't have to squeeze quite as hard to hold onto the club real well could be something that would be very, very comfortable for a lot of golfers.
Absolutely interesting. Here's a letter that came in from Kevin Teberg from Eagan, Minnesota. And he says that he keeps up with all the latest equipment, but his wife, who also plays a lot, doesn't really pay attention to that kind of information, which I'm sure is standard for most couples who play together. And he says, I would like to know more about ladies' equipment.
Yep.
And he wants to know if there's any suggestions about that. And he mentions a couple different lines. He says, she's about a 20 handicap and has been playing with an older set of TaylorMade ladies' clubs.
Here is probably the number one area in golf where every single woman who plays the game really will benefit from being custom fit. The reason is because their options in being able to buy standard-made ladies' clubs off the rack are severely limited even compared to the men. Okay, that's a business fact. You know, what is it? I think the last time I saw in a statistic, for the big-time golf companies, 8.5% of their equipment sales are in women's clubs, 92% in men's. So they just don't deliver enough options out there. There's a key thing, you know, in the custom club makers know day in and day out, and it's another one of these old adages I work with that says, the longer the club, the heavier the club, the stiffer the shaft, the lower the loft, the harder the club will be to hit. Okay, now when it comes to ladies, generally, okay, if you're talking about a woman who's a 20 handicapper, probably doesn't have a real high swing speed, probably isn't nearly as strong as the average man golfer out there, may or may not be that athletically inclined. Okay, that we don't know just from this situation here. But the point is that most all of these standard-made ladies' clubs bought off the rack, they're too long, especially in the woods. So that's number one, is to get the length down there to where it's going to be so much easier for the lady to control with that. The other one is and especially so in terms of the driver in the woods, most of the ladies' drivers that are sold out there today do not even come close to having enough loft on the driver to maximize the distance that the average lady brings to the first tee. You know, a good example, I mean, our statistics, you know, the average woman golfer today has a driver swing speed of about 67 miles an hour. Okay, in all of my 30-plus years of fitting research, that average swing speed of 67 miles an hour will maximize driver distance with a driver loft of 16 or 17 degrees.
Wow. That high?
Yeah, it works a little bit like this. I'll give you a little parallel with this. If you, you know, let's say you're out there washing the car, okay, and your kid comes up on the other side and lips off to you, so you want to get back at him, you know. But your kid sees you getting ready to aim the water hose at him, okay? So they're starting to run away. You can't run over and turn the pressure on any greater, okay? The water pressure coming out of the hose is equivalent to your swing speed, okay?
Uh-huh.
And what you have to do to shoot that stream as far as possible is adjust the angle that that stream comes out of the hose. That would be the loft of the club head. So the slower the swing speed, the higher you need that ball to launch, thus more loft on the driver to get it to stay in the air long enough to carry its maximum distance. That's a fact with the driver, and it's a fact with what we'll call the second longest wood. Okay, and this is a big one for ladies and slower swing speed players. Ladies should not buy a 3-wood today. They don't have the swing speed, the strength to be able to get that 3-wood loft up in the air high enough to really carry as far as they want need for a second longest wood. So going from, let's say, a 16 or 17 degree driver, the next stop should be somewhere around a 20 degree fairway wood. Okay, in most cases that could be a 5-wood, maybe a 7-wood. Okay, but to try and fight hitting a 14 or 15 or even 16 degree loft 3-wood off the deck for a 65 or 67 mile an hour swing speed, it ain't going to work unless your fairways haven't been watered for about 3 months. In that case, you're fine. But if they're normal, lush fairways, you've got to get that second longest wood up in the air to fly to get your maximum second shot distance, you know, with a fairway wood out there. So the ideal set makeup for the average woman is going to be a much higher lofted driver that's going to be a lot shorter in length than what is standard for a woman, which is 44 or 45 and a half inches out there, only 1 inch shorter than the man's. Then going with something like a 20 degree loft, you know, next fairway wood, and then potentially like a 25 or 26 degree 9-wood after that. Okay, then in the irons, don't even think about having a conventional iron, a normal iron, cavity back, longer than a 7-iron. Okay. For the clubs that you would normally have chosen a 6-iron or a 5-iron or a 4-iron for, this is where the hybrid clubs are going to come into play to deliver that much easier to get high in the air to fly and easier to hit than a normal, you know, more narrow-bodied cavity-back 5, 4, 6-iron, you know, a 4, 5, or 6-iron in there. And that's what we call in smart golf the proper set makeup. You know, the USGA tells you that you can only carry 14 clubs in your bag, okay? Good thing is they don't tell you what 14 clubs to carry. And the best club fitters in the world know that one of the most powerful game improvement elements in fitting is set makeup, getting the right complement of clubs for the ability and the swing of the golfer they're fitting. And that really, you know, in other words, a woman who buys a 3-through pitching wedge set of irons, that's a ridiculous expense today because the vast majority of women can't hit the 3, 4, 5, or even the 6-iron high enough to really gain the full benefit out of those clubs.
Your thought on hybrid clubs?
There's a lot of confusion out in the market today with the hybrid clubs, okay? Some companies build them so that they are just a narrow-body duplicate of a fairway wood. You know, they would be the same length as a fairway wood, but just with a narrow body down there, okay? The ideal situation with a hybrid is to sit there and say, look, I can't hit this 3 and 4 iron anymore, okay? The lofts over the years have been reduced so much by the big companies in an effort to sell more golf clubs by saying, hey, this year's 5-iron, you're going to hit 10 yards further than last year's. Well, consumer doesn't know it's got 3 degrees less loft on it. He still sees it's got a 5 on the sole. So he assumes that today's 5-iron is the same as yesterday's 5-iron. And it isn't. You go back 30 years ago in the game, the standard loft in the whole industry on a 5-iron was 32 degrees. Today, it's 26. Now, in having reduced lofts over these years to do that, what they've done is they've made the 3 and the 4-iron virtually unhittable for the average golfer with that. And that's why if you go to a shotgun start tournament and you're kind of killing time before everybody gets in their cart and heads out to the tee, stick your head and look into everybody's bag, and I'll bet you dimes to donuts the 3 and 4-iron are almost as shiny as they were the day they were bought. People don't use them because they can't hit them.
Absolutely.
So the way to get hybrid clubs to replace those hard-to-hit long irons is take your 3 and 4-iron or, you know, to the store or to the club maker and say, make my hybrid the same length and the same loft as this club right here. If you do that, then your distance gap, you know, your distance gap for each club is going to be what it's supposed to be with the irons. Each club hitting the ball a different distinct distance, but the difference will be in the hybrids because of the body construction and usually in the shaft difference with that. They're going to be a lot easier to get up in the air, far, far more so than a conventional 3 or 4 iron. And a ton of people should be using a hybrid 5, you know, or the equivalent of your 5 iron in length and loft, because 26-degree 5 iron today in the average set, that's really hard for the average golfer to really get up high and hit consistently well.
Tom, I'm sure that there are many more questions that are being sparked by our listeners right now. Would you mind if they wrote to me if I forward them to you?
And I'd be happy to answer. I do that a lot, and fortunately, after writing 8 books, I can type about 120 words a minute, so it won't take long to get a response back.
Okay, so write to me at fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com if you have any questions for Tom Wishon, and I will forward it to him and get the answer back to you. Your website is?
Our website is TW Golf Tech, TWGOLFTECH, TWGolfTech.com. And we also have a listing under a link called Clubmaker Locator there of custom clubmakers that I've personally known for years that I've screened and say, these are good guys and gals. They're going to put you into a really good fitting experience and end up with a really good playing set of golf clubs.
And we couldn't even cover half the questions that I had prepared for you. Would you come back and talk to us again?
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you so
much. Be happy to.
Really enjoyed the conversation and the enlightening information that you've just provided. Thanks again.
Fred, my pleasure, and best wishes to everybody out there in this great game.
It's time to ask Kenny. Do you have a question about specific golf gear or are baffled about what to look for in a category of golf products? Kenny Nicholson, sales manager at EdwinWattsGolf.com, is willing to help. And if we use your question on the show, you'll receive a free Golf Smarter Edwin Watts Golf hat. To submit your question, send an email to fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com with the subject, Ask Kenny. Ask Kenny is brought to you by Edwin Watts Golf and EdwinWattsGolf.com, golf's most trusted retailer since 1968. Hey, Kenny.
Hey, Fred. How you doing today?
I'm doing fine, and I understand that you're on the road, you're in the middle of some meetings, and you stepped out of the meetings to do this. I really appreciate you doing that.
Well, glad to do it.
And so let's go right ahead and ask a question that we got from Dustin Wanke of Paradise, California. And he's going out to buy his first golf club, and he wants to buy a wedge, and he's not really sure. He says, I'm thinking of purchasing a new lob wedge or gap wedge, and being that I'm just starting at this, can you tell me what to look for and why I would want a stiff or a regular flex if I'm not going to be hitting the club that hard?
That's a very good question, actually, and I'll point to what you're going to look for. Somebody that's just starting out and looking for a forgiving wedge might want to get something that has a little bit of a cavity to the back of it, or a perimeter-weighted wedge, which is going to offer you a little bit larger sole and more bounce. That way it's going to be more forgiving. The chances of hitting it fat are going to be a little more minimal with that type of wedge. A blade-type wedge for somebody that's just starting out could be a little bit more difficult. As far as the flex goes, when you get into wedges, you're talking about a shaft that's only 35 and a half inches long, and the majority of everybody's putter's 35 inches long. So you can just imagine having a putter with flex to it. It's kind of difficult to make a wedge that has anything other than a stiff shaft if you go with a steel shafted golf club. So I wouldn't worry so much about flex as I would just the design of the wedge that you're looking for. You want one that's a little bit bigger than a normal blade-style wedge, something that's going to have a little more bounce and be a little more forgiving for you.
Well, I would think that the only time you'd really need to concern yourself with the flex of a putter is if you're buying Nerf clubs.
There, exactly. Or if you're playing them really, really big greens, where you need to get a little acceleration.
With the big holes and the balls that are like softballs, right?
Yeah, it's just difficult to make a club that has flex to it when the shaft's only 35 and a half inches. It's very hard to do.
He also wants to know what would be the best degree of bounce.
You know, any time, and that really comes down to conditions. If you're playing on using it strictly out of the bunkers, you want a wedge that has a lot of bounce. You know, 12 to 14 degrees. If you're talking about a sand wedge, if you play on a grass that's very hard, we discussed this in a previous show. You want something that has less bounce, so it can try to dig in and not just bounce off the hard fairways. So anytime you think of sand, soft fairways, think of more bounce. When you think of hard fairways, think of less bounce. That's the best way to think about that.
And he should also, I guess, go out and try to hit some out on the driving range, because there's 58 degree, there's 60 degree, there's 62 degree, and he's really kind of lost on what to look for.
If he stops at a pitching wedge, which is typically 48 degrees, and you're wanting to get a couple of wedges, try to stay 4 degrees. You know, if your pitching wedge is 48, you want a gap wedge that's 52 and a sand wedge that's 56. That way you stay consistent with the way your set typically runs. Okay, that's the best way. You know, stay within 4 degrees. If you have a 50-degree pitching wedge, go with a 54 gap wedge and a 58, sand wedge. You know, just try to keep it consistent with how your set flows.
Great.
Or if you're trying to just fill a void on a certain yardage, if you're wanting to hit a club 80 yards, you can go out to the driving range, find out what loft you need to hit 80 yards, and go from there.
Excellent. All right, well, thank you. Just want to remind everybody that next week on January 16th, we're going to do our drawing for the Tour Edge QL Irons. They're valued at $600, folks. It's a 3-7 hybrid, and then an 8-9 pitching wedge or the standard irons. And if you'd like to win those, send an email to pickme@golfsmarterpodcast.com. Put the subject Tour Edge, T-O-U-R, Tour Edge on your email. And along with your email address, please include your name and shipping address so that we can send you the prize if you win, of course. For more information, check the show notes for this program. And again, the deadline for entries is January 15th, midnight, and we'll announce the winner on the morning of January 16th and have the show published that afternoon. We're going to continue with our shopping special of 10% off any purchase you'd like at edwinwattsgolf.com. The best way to check out edwinwattsgolf.com and to find out all the specials that you can receive is go to golfsmarterpodcast.com and click on the Edwin Watts Golf link on the top, and it'll take you right to our own page on there. Kenny, that's it for now. Safe travels to you. I hope your meetings go well, and we'll talk to you next week.
My pleasure.
And this week's closing quote comes from David Reed of Lexington, Kentucky, who shares what he affectionately refers to as the best tip that has helped him get out of a number of putting slumps. And it goes like this. Look at the ball. Look at the hole. Roll the ball to the hole. Quotes, comments, or suggestions, please send your email to fred@golfsmarterpodcast.com.